feed management is a big one, as even when we move to lay these roosters, for them not falling behind. And that's something that I see that they're not. We've got to make sure that they have proper feed distribution, proper feeder space, and where we see these incremental gains, because that's going to impact testicular development.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an eco-lab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
This is Phil Stair with Wisenetics, and we're going to interview Dr. Bill Dozier with Auburn on the Poultry Podcast. And Bill, glad to have you here today. Do you want to tell the crowd about yourself a little bit? We've known each other a long time, but let everybody else know about you.
My name is Bill Dozier. I'm an extension specialist at Auburn University. I've been at Auburn for roughly about 17 years. And prior to that, I was in Starkville at USDA poultry unit. And then prior to that, I was at the University of Georgia with a 100% extension appointment. So I've been at this for about this over 25 years, and really enjoy interacting with our industry and trying to find solutions and enhance poultry production.
Yeah. So I think, like I said, I think everybody knows who you are, but maybe those who don't. Now you're working extension. Go ahead and describe that and what you've been focused on here of late.
Here of late, I've started in extension here at Auburn back in 2024, and a lot of my work has been involved around really broiler breeder management over the past probably year and a half or so. And part of this, we were able to last year have our first pullet and broiler breeder conference at Auburn, and it was very successful. We had roughly about 90 people in attendance and from about 7 states. So really proud of that and being able to get relevant information to our industry, whether it be live production managers or breeder and pullet managers, and as well as our service techs, because they're at the ground roots, and that's where a lot of this really happens. So,
for over 40 years, Jeffo has been redefining animal nutrition with high-performance, non-medicated solutions. At the core is Jeffo Matrix technology, a disruptive approach that synchronizes nutrient release for precise delivery. Active in 65 countries, we develop cutting-edge formulas, essential oils, enzymes, and acidifiers to optimize health, performance, and reproduction. Jeffo is transforming animal feeding, making life easier for animals and people who care for them.
Well, go ahead. You say broiler breeder reproduction. That's a big topic. I know it's just one line of commodity, but still, in terms of that, go ahead and tell us. We're working on the boy side, the girl side, both eggs.
Both. I've been trying to really, focus a lot on the male side in the hen house, but then working with both in pullets and cockerels. So, overall hatches, Phil, that's probably one of our biggest challenges in the industry. I mean, we see flocks that are at 86%, but then there's others we're working with that are down in the 70s. And we used to really target 84% hatching rate, and we, that was kind of our benchmark. And here over the last several years, we've and that 78-79% overall is an industry average. And so, one, we're not hatching the number of chicks. And then as we've been in ABF programs, you know, that our 7-day broiler mortality, we've seen that go up. I mean, it was years ago, it's a commonplace where we'd have 0.6 to 0.7 7-day mortality. And now we're just kind of getting callous to, well over 1.5. And, you know, with not only mortality, but morbidity, when you start coupling these together, then we start seeing empty shackles at the processing plant. And that's not ever good for anyone involved in production, as you well know. So I just really feel like this is a big area. There's a lot of opportunities that we really need to look at, because the way these birds have been selected and really for growth and because particularly these male lines, I mean, that's where we're getting our improved feed conversion. We're, seeing about a 0.02 decrease in feed conversion annually on these birds, particularly we look at a target of, say, 5.5 pounds. And so seeing about a 35 to 40 gram increase in broiler weight. So it's a lot of this is coming from these parent stock. And so we've got to really manage these birds differently.
So in your experience, Bill, have you seen folks manage, you say, about the 84% target? Is anybody getting that currently?
Been in operations where you'll hit some of that on a specific week to week, and then it seems like there's certain weeks that same complex operation can backslide. So it's really about the devil and the details. We've got to really hone in on this, because this is a totally different bird. I know that some of these pullets back a few years ago, they were consuming about 3.2 grams per minute, and now they're about 5.3 grams per minute. So you can really see where we've got this big appetite in our broilers, but this is causing some challenges with us on feeder space, feed distribution, and it's just having a larger effect, because we're seeing more piling with these pullets. We also see some feather loss, and then rearing, we're faced with coccidiosis and histomonas, as you know, and that's just leading to poor feathering in these breeders. And then the hens really don't want to have a lot of activity with the males post 40 weeks, and it just compounds a lot of these fertility issues for us.
So in terms of that, let's target that and talk about feed consumption that's being picked up, of course, for the broiler, and the weight gains that they're getting, which is incredible, linear increased genetic improvement. But what are the tricks? In terms of counseling producers, are the birds going to eat faster? How are they going to maintain that reproductive efficiency in the pullet?
One area that it really starts is feeder space with these pullets. And a lot of the just new housing, I'll see 16 pullets per pan. And obviously, we need to be much lower than that, probably around that 12 pullet per pan. And same thing with cockerels. You may see 12, 13 cockerels per pan when they really need, we need to be in that 8 to 10 range, 9 or so per pan. So I think one is feeder space. And the other big challenge that we have is feed distribution. We thought the pan feeders were going to be our answer. Because obviously with our chain trough, we lose some pullets there. In terms of mortality and livability. But we also have other challenges with these switches and so forth, and really not getting distribution from one end to the other. And these birds have to consume, our nutrient consumption needs to be correct. And if these pans are, we don't have, if they're not charged, then certainly those, we may think we have the adequate you know, in terms of birds per pan, but there's not feed there. We certainly don't. And then we often will see it, you know, a lot of pullets going haywire trying to find a pan. So, you know, that kind of really leads into some.
Simple solution, maybe not so simple. If they're going to eat faster, would it be put more feeders in an old house, or I guess build more houses and lower your density? That'd be the two solutions.
Lower the density would obviously would be one solution, but you know, housing is tough to come by these days, and you know, the terms of price of housing is a lot of these houses are, you know, whether we're talking about broiler pullets or breed, I mean, we're well over 20, you know, to put chicks in, we're looking about $25 a square foot. So, and if we're going to these larger houses, then from an economic standpoint, we're trying to make, trying to make it cash flow. But at the same time, we've got to be able to provide, you know, a uniform set of hens and roosters to a hen grower. And so I think we've got to look at this a lot differently, whether if we add additional line, additional loop, you know, we just may have to really rethink what we're doing and make sure that we've got this corrected, because this is a really big problem I see out in the industry. And, you know, and the other, you know, feed management is a big one, as even when we move to lay these roosters, for them not falling behind. And that's something that I see that they're not. We've got to make sure that they have proper feed distribution, proper feeder space, and where we see these incremental gains, because that's going to impact testicular development. And certainly if they start losing weight and we see flabby hearts and keel bones, I mean, we're not going in the right direction there. Then.
So is that solution in terms of, you know, you go from the pullet house to the hen house, and you would recommend different feeds for the boys and the girls in the hen house?
I really feel like that's kind of where we've got to go, because we know that these birds are selected for, you know, breast development, lean meat accretion. We know that lysine particularly, and there's other amino acids that really promote breast meat development. And so with a separate male feed, a couple of things that I really like about it. One, we can potentially limit digestible lysine to 0.40, 0.45. But the other big piece in that is energy for these roosters. At 25 weeks, we may see, you know, 330 kcals per day, but you know, we need to move that envelope. At 45 weeks, we may be at 366 kcals per day, and then about 381 toward, you know, 60 weeks of age. So certainly we want to see that incremental increase in terms of energy consumption to maintain these birds, because, you know, we're starting out, you know, we may be at 7 pounds, but toward the end we target maybe at 10 pounds. And as we increase that body weight, they need that maintenance. And I think this is something that, an area that we have some room that we can improve on, because there's a lot of flocks that may start roosters out at 18, 19 pounds. Now, some of them may be on hen feed, but we really need to make sure that these birds are consuming the proper cake out calories per day to keep that incremental growth. And, that's something that I think we really need to take a look at, but we also need to make sure we got adequate fleshing on these birds. And I think a lost area that we're not doing is we need to continue weighing and fleshing these birds throughout the lay cycle. And oftentimes once we hit peak, then I'll see people that'll only weigh once or twice a month, and we've really got to keep on that and throughout and weighing, you know, 10 or 15 birds and, you know, four different sections of the house. Just little things like keeping the floors level. So these roosters can all have access to feed is very key. Keep having good feed distribution. Even if we're boosting for 2 or 3 days, just need to make sure that we've got consistent feed from one end of the house to the other. I mean, these are, I know it seems like a lot of, you know, small little areas, you know, I think they lead to really big issues across the complex if we're not careful.
So I guess I hear you saying this is a lot of basics, even with the new genetics. It still requires maybe more attention to the basics, but the basics got to be there.
They've got to be there. You know, we got, you know, we don't need, you know, very simple, like pans don't need to be too high, that we've got some roosters that can't get there, because then we're, again, we're looking at feed allocation to these birds, and if they can't reach the feed or some of the smaller birds in there, then they're not getting the nutrients that we formulate these diets to. So, yeah, it's a lot of the little things that we were able to get away with, say, 5 years ago. But this is a totally different bird, very high-performing bird. We're really pleased with the progeny, and I don't see us as an industry as a whole going backwards, because when we really look at FCRs and breast meat yield, I think we're, as a whole, everyone's very pleased with that. And so it's just now it's on the breeder department of really fine-tuning and how we manage this flock, I think, is.
So do you think the, in terms of the hatchability, of course, it's been driven by fertility always, but the fertility recipe being mostly with the males, do you think that's the male management's affecting that? Or how much do you think the hen plays in the whole fertility hatchability?
There's some room there definitely on the hen side there. And we look at hatch too. It can be very complicated because, we start looking at breakout residues. I mean, we've got egg handling, we've got egg transportation, egg storage, all of that too goes into goes into hatch. It's not just all male fertility. Yeah, male fertility is a big piece of that, but also there's other areas that we have to pay attention to detail, and particularly on the, you know, these conveyor belts we have today, and not running these eggs too fast and getting into farm cracks. Also trying to be very dedicated to picking up eggs about 4 times a day is important as well. Because all of that leads to hatch. And so it's not just all on the male. I know that's an area that we want to point to, obviously, but hatch does tailor a lot of other things. And as well as just pulling out an egg buggy and putting it in the cooler, and then some people wanting to take it back out, and it just little things like that, you know, that can obviously impact long term on hatch. So
if you were to prioritize, particularly in your work that you've done now as extension specialist, what would you say in terms of improving hatch? Starting out, what's your basic? Is it uniformity of your pullets? Is it your weight? The boy to girl ratio, you know, the size differential in the 4 weeks of age, where have you seen the industry have the most need? Again,
one area that I've been involved with is grading some cockerel flocks, and you know, I've seen where we've been into flocks at 8 weeks of age and at, you know, 15% CV, and being able to grade these into low, moderate, and heavy, and get some of these groups down into the single digits, I think it's really promising. And being able to have a cockerel house set up so that we can feed these birds differently, so that when we start moving them to a hen house, that we do have a more uniform set of birds, and we can really tailor, getting into having these birds synchronized, both the hen and the rooster. And but it does, grading does seem like that it shows some promise. But one area about grading that I caution people is once we grade these birds, the management, it really ups the management at that point. I mean, just because they're graded and we don't manage them properly, we can be back with a very poor uniform flock. So there are some tricks that do the trade on that, as well as trying to get the, feed to these birds. And these lighter weight birds, I've noticed, there's a lot of feed dynamics there. So once we grade, if you increase, the next week, you really got to be careful on that, because these birds can get over target, because now all the boss birds are moved out. So now we have these lighter birds, and it's just very amazing the feed behavior dynamics when we move those bigger birds out of the flock. But that's an area on technology that I'm pretty excited about.
So grading, I've been very little involved with that. You're talking about size differential within a population and how many pens, how many sizes do you think you should have?
What we call a two-way grade, where you would have slightly below the average to your lows and then slightly above the average to your highs. But, I mean, you're basically weighing, say we've got a house of 6,000 cockerels, and you're weighing every one of those cockerels. And start out, you may weigh 10 or 12% of that flock and try to get some baseline averages of where your high grouping would be, your average grouping, and your low grouping. And then I like a three-way grade. I feel like we've got a little more control. There's other parts of the world that'll do a four-way grade or more. And but it's all about labor. This is very labor-intensive. That's the downside of it. But if it can yield a percent, 2% improvement, like even a percent improvement in hatch, that there feel like there's some merit. What I feel like the big, largest benefit is we're really feeding these low-end cockerels. So when we move them to the hen house, maybe we won't experience quite as much male mortality, and that we can have more, end up with more of our original males by 60 weeks. But this is an area that's caught on with the industry, with some complexes for, over the past year or so.
That's another question I had, is what's the longest you've been doing this program with the sorting? You've seen programs a couple of years.
Well, I've just been involved with it probably about a year or so, and I think there's still a lot to be learned in terms of tracking these graded males all the way through, and really doing needs to be more of an economic cost benefit on what it's going to cost on grading, and what is the return, and are we seeing a reduction in male mortality? Are we seeing an increase in hatch, and putting the numbers to it? I think it's really needed. And we're also seeing grading machines now that can really grade these birds. It can drop these birds into three different groups, and that's really expediting and reducing some labor as well. So Big Dutchman has one, and then there's another one out of Brazil. So that's really getting some interest too,
And they're currently being used in U.S.?
They are.
The systems. Okay.
Yeah,
I was not aware of that. I've heard about it in Europe, and I think grading's been going on more in South America than in North America for longer.
It has, yeah. And, it's just trying to get over the hurdle of just the overall cost and labor. I mean, you may be looking at 50 cents a bird on each grading, and if you do one at 4 weeks and come back at 8, and you would like to do one at 12, but it's just all about the dollars and cents to make this work. But that is a technology or practice that you're seeing more in the U.S. I think we've recognized that we've got to get these flocks more uniform into the hen house. So
I think I've heard then, Bill, in terms of helping out the listener, two of the things you've talked about, you know, male feed in the hen house, and then you talked about grading males. These are two accommodations for the higher yielding. What other, say, new technologies and new practices?
The other challenge is that I think probably the biggest challenge we have is feeder space. And the next one's probably feed distribution. But those two are just significant. And I think we've got to, as an industry, a couple of things on housing. We need to really reevaluate and build a house that, you know, has got proper feeder space. I think that's somehow we've got to figure out how we can cash flow this in the complex and make it work. I think that's a big one. And then the other one is just managing feed distribution. I mean, these are two basic fundamentals of managing breeders that we've been working on for a long time. I think the other technology I see that's needed in the future is presentation feeding on pullets.
Okay, describe that.
Can be set up so we can basically lower those feeders in the morning, and all that feed is distributed from one end to the other, and so that's some technology we need. I mean, I really feel like that our genetics has surpassed some of our equipment, and we've got to catch up in that from a technology standpoint on that. I think that's no way around that. And I think we've got to reevaluate what we're doing. And I think pullet presentation feeding is got to come to the forefront.
What have you worked at all with the spin feeders? I've seen them, I guess, more in Europe than I have over here.
I haven't worked with them. I've just seen pictures and videos of the spin feeders. And yeah, that's big. I guess the other avenue that from a European standpoint they're able to do, and we're not as much set up here, is they can feed hens morning and afternoon, split that feeding, and behavioral differences. They feel like that it pays off, but just haven't figured out how we would successfully do that here in the States. The way we're production system set up, size of these flocks and so forth, and getting the feed, having the feed distributed from one end to the other, because it's a lot of difference. And somebody has only 1,500 birds in a flock versus 6,000. So, and I even heard of somebody was telling me this week about a barn had 17,000 pullets. One barn. So yeah, that's some of this is that the size we're going to these houses and cash flowing and so forth. So
this is a very exciting information here on Poultry Podcast you're sharing. In terms of other, maybe more on the hen side now, she's also, you know, providing yield to the picture. And I think even I've seen myself just nutrient distribution. The hen, she's going to put protein down ahead of even abdominal fat. That's different than when I started 30 years ago.
Yeah, I can remember the day when we had 1.5% fat on these hens. And sometimes we're lucky if we even get 0.5% on them today. And it's seems like these excess nutrients, they just go straight to the breast. And we've got this female broiler essentially at that point. And so, and then also with the hens is being able to males and females, and at 26 weeks, we need to have these grills set that we're locking out these roosters. So they're not stealing hen feed, even though if we're particularly if we're feeding a separate, you know, male diet. So the challenge we get into with, a hen diet feeding a male is like lysine intake on a milligrams per day will be in the range around 650, 700 milligrams per day. Whereas if we can hold it back on a male feed, we're probably in the range of 400 to 500 milligrams per day. So really trying to limit that breast meat development there, muscle. And and I think another little piece that we kind of tend to forget about is water lines with males, is having that in the scratch area, and maybe having, you know, water line, have two different water lines in the scratch area, but to be able to encourage and keep those males in the scratch area, because they really don't need to be on those slats. I mean, there's really not a lot good that can come from that. I know they like the sun and they really like that side of things, but we really look at leg issues. And, you know, one area that I see, I call them penguins, but I never can figure out what causes that, Phil. I mean, you may have a better appreciation on that than I do, but it may just be a genetic disorder, but. You know, I think leg problems and these cockerels we see, you know, too, gives us some challenges on longevity. But, you know, we used to be on pullets and rearing, you know, mortality was like 4%. We could go 96 live. Now we're about a 92% live. And cockerels were at 20, 22% mortality during rearing. And so, when we're paying $11 for female chick and $14 for male chick, that really gets expensive. Dead hens don't lay eggs.
That's the first one.
So we've got to keep them alive. And really, you know, I think our COXIE programs are, you know, very important. And metanuma is really hitting us here in Alabama quite a bit. And I know in a lot of other states as well. And so I really seeing more disease challenges than we ever have today. And I don't know, maybe this, you know, it gets back to the genetics of the bird, and more we chase yield, then are we giving up, you know, reproduction? Yes, probably so. And then where are we at with immunity? You know, it's not uncommon that we see livability of broilers at 92%. It wasn't that long ago. We were 95, 96%. So, you know, I think we, as an industry, we may have to find a compromise somewhere in here. So, is a 40% breast meat yield number, do we ever want to get there with muscle myopathies? Then where are we at from an immune standpoint on the broiler side, as well as on the breeder side too? So, there's a lot to be done. Very exciting to be working out in the field and helping people. I really enjoy that. So,
do you have any current projects you can talk about? Things that are ongoing right now that are got you excited?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'd like to keep moving forward on, you know, I've been attracted to some of this grading work. I think it really, I'd like to see where that ends up for us as an industry, you know, and be able to track that through, you know, but lay and see where all this, where it all ends up, because, you know, it, like I said, it's 50 cents a bird roughly every time we do this. And so we're doing it at two different times. You know, we've got to be able to make up this with hatch and as well as livability on these roosters. But, you know, I think one area we forget, and I'll mention this to people, well, you know, 1% hatch, and but people that don't live in this world, they'll say, well, that's just 1%, but when you really extrapolate that out all the way through broilers, that these numbers just get exponential, as you well know. And I know it seems like a small number to people, but it's not. And there's a lot of revenue and all. So, and I think that's something we've got to continually look at. But both our breeder companies that we have now, I mean, they've done a fabulous job with genetic selection. There's no question.
Yeah. Let me back up a little bit, too. I guess it's kind of a personal question. Commingled rearing versus sex separate. You've talked a lot about sex separate and, you know, the spike males and having them. Is there a social advantage to commingling mating behavior in the hen house versus the sex separate?
I don't really know. I mean, I guess I'm just not a big proponent of commingling rearing because I just feel like we lose control somewhat, you know, even if we start separating these males and females early on. You know, but one of the areas that I think we've really got to be mindful of is space for these roosters. And that really hurts us on uniformity. For example, if we're at, you know, 1.85 versus a 3.0 or 2.85, there's a big difference there on terms of livability and uniformity and all. And I'm just a big proponent of sex separate, you know, for that reason. I'm sure there's some benefits people could argue about being co-mingled, but I think some of these other areas are really on space requirements, because we can get a little tighter on these hens and pullets and be fine, but not on these cockerels. And that's and I know the University of Georgia has been, they finished up on some work that where they looked at some co-mingling during rearing, but I guess personally, I really think we've got to look at that square footage on these males and just overall uniformity, because it's kind of hard to manage the two if we got them mixed. And
yeah, I think your point was well made earlier, Bill, that the genetics are improving in every year. And with that, we just can't stay static. You know, we're not going to have the same bird if we treat it the same way we treated last year's bird. So, and I do. Now, you know, you're right in terms of pacing the housing with the genetics. You know, do the genetics outstrip the housing? You know, you have a 15-year investment in a building, and you're going to depreciate that over 15 years. And then in 15 years, the birds change dramatically from what you started. And that's, like you said, the economics of that and how that all works out, that's a current challenge and will continue to be a challenge.
And there's people out there and these operations there. That's what they get paid to make decisions on. And evaluate that. But yeah, I'm just looking at this strictly on the ground level, and you know, it was what I see. And I really do see that we have to move forward to building cockerel specific houses. They're set up feeding systems that are, if it's grading pans out, then we've got to have multiple bins, you know, hoppers, whole nine yards set up so that we're equipped to move these birds and grade them and feed them correctly. And that and presentation feeding, I think, is two big areas in there from the equipment side that I think we possibly could see in the future.
And that's a great looking forward to what could happen, what maybe should happen, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I think back to your day-to-day job, you're working with what you got. You know, the growers got a 30-year-old house and he's still growing chickens in it. And the things that you've seen, I think I asked a question earlier, but in terms of even this last couple of years there in Alabama, would you say your number one thing is feed distribution's not worked out the best, floor's not being even, just more than more common issues?
Yeah, the feeder space and the feed distribution, those are the two big ones that are really dominating uniformity challenges, I would say, is our two, because these pullets are so aggressive in terms of feed consumption.
And I know, too, my own experience with different type of feeding equipment, and not all pans are the same, and, you know, a low-speed track versus a high-speed track and variable speeds and
some of these smaller houses that we were rearing in, you know, these slower speed out, they got the job done. But today, the way these birds appetite, we've got to have, we've got to distribute that feed in 3 minutes or less.
And uniformly around the house.
Yes. And it's just some of these slower speed systems, particularly in a bigger house, they just can't get it done. And so we run into challenges there. So just, I do know the growers that have got these, I mean, they got to do the best they got to work with, you know. It's not like they can change overnight. I get that. I mean, we've got to, there's a balance there, you know, but.
So if folks want to call you in Alabama, you know, come help them out. Your phone's open and ready to respond.
Ready to help.
Okay, good. What about outside of Alabama? Are you allowed to go outside or no?
Yeah, I can work with people outside as well. So
no, I've enjoyed work with you in the past, and don't get to do it much right now in my current role. But definitely, it's been fun talking to you, Bill, and hearing some of your experiences and also some of your views of the future.
Yeah.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. At Nexus, powered by SAM, we redefine livestock nutrition with science-backed innovations that enhance performance, maximize efficiency, and promote sustainability. We connect producers with the future of animal health and productivity through cutting-edge feed technologies and environmentally conscious solutions. By addressing the demand for efficient, sustainable nutrition, we reflect SAM Nutrition's commitment to excellence, delivering premium, scientifically proven solutions that drive results.
I'd like to wrap these conversations up. You know, Wisenetics likes to ask about some personal things, and these probably aren't going to get on the main deal, but what book or resource inside poultry has been your most valuable or go-to resource?
There's several really inside poultry. I guess one I'm trying to work on now is there was a book recently came out last year or two on breeder management nutrition. It's been put together by several authors. I'm trying to work my way through reading that.
Good. And then on a personal nature, nothing to do with agriculture, but another resource or book that you personally find encouraging or go back to regularly?
One that I really go back to periodically from time to time over the years is a little book called Good to Great. And it's really identifying, it's really focusing on corporations and management of good companies to great companies and why are they successful. And I've tried to take some of those just philosophies and try to apply them to what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, do I really have my priorities straight, both personal as well as professionally? Because I think this whole work-life balance is very important. And, because you definitely don't want to be burned out. This is a marathon, so we've got to do the right thing.
I think your white hair shows you earned some of that.
I've earned it. Learned it the hard way. So, that's a book I find fascinating to see why some companies were very successful, whereas others were at the top at one time and then changes that they went down. So some people may want to just look at that. They may be involved in academia or not necessarily in a company, but there's a way to read that information and try to apply it to their situation, I think. So,
that's good. One more question that dovetails into that. Counsel that you would give the next generation to be successful?
Well, number one is work ethic is, to me, the base platform. And, you know, if you don't know an answer, there's a lot of good people in this industry that'll help you and seek out for advice. I think that's just surround yourself with good people. I mean, that would be my advice to a younger person starting out.
That's good. Yeah. And like you said, my experience has been the same. It's about everybody willing to help if you ask.
Right.
But this has been fun, Bill. Again, Poultry Podcast thanks you. Wisnetics thanks you for taking your time. And maybe we'll get to do this again. But it's been good talking to a friend.
Yes, and, sir.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.